Welcome to my second AMA. I am, for those who don't know, I'm Andrew Galea, Guns Galea, and I'm the creator of Judgment. So this is the second time I've done this. Ask me anything. I collect questions beforehand on our forums, and I go through these. A lot of fun, a lot of good reveals normally come out of these things. I'm looking forward to revealing some new stuff, answering lots of questions, and I'll also take questions live from the people who are watching the stream. This is going to be released as a podcast as well as the video, so there will be some questions coming in as we go. But we've got a couple of viewers already, which is fantastic. Hey Kyriakos, Nightfly, love the hat. Glad you like the hat. There's a bit of story behind that. I lost my amazingly fantastic trucker Judgment hat. There's only been three ever made, fully embroidered, and I lost it on the way to Gen Con, left it in one of the airports in the layover. So this is the hat I'm wearing now. Let's see how we go. Cool. All right. For those who are new or don't know, this is a Judgment. Judgment.game is the website. We've got a pretty cool Facebook group that you can look at. Over 500 people. You can learn more about the game going to the website. We also have a brilliant Discord community, which is there as well. So feel free to join. Discord is very vibrant. We get lots of users every day, lots of topics, lots of things to talk about, pictures of models. It's a fantastic community that's growing, which is great. So please join in, find out more about the game. It's an awesome game. It's been around for a number of years now. It's just starting to get some major traction in North America. And today we're going to be answering a lot of questions that have come from players, which is fun. So let's kick things off. Might as well dive straight in to the questions. Question number one. So basically, I got a lot of questions that were similar, so I grouped them together. But there's still about another, I don't know, it's about 15 or 20 questions, so there's a lot to get through. Question number one. With the twins coming, will goblins be mostly team units to make up for their weaker stature, or will we have some like Jaeger? So a bit of background. Jaeger was our first goblin, which was a mounted model. He's live. He's been available in retail for a couple of months or so. He was on a 50mm base because he's a goblin on a big demon wolf. He's been very popular. Now we spoiled the next two heroes, which was the ones you can see on your screen at the moment. Bale and Sana, they're goblin infantry, two models. And they also introduced the concept of a hero unit. It's the first time we've done that. We've got heroes who do summon other models, but this is an actual unit with a whole bunch of new rules. The question is around whether we're going to go that way with goblins or not. The hero unit does lend itself well to goblins because they are stat lines and they are weaker than other races on their own. So having a Minotaur unit, for example, would be quite difficult to do, to balance. So potentially yes, but we will be having other goblins like Jaeger as well. So it's not just going to be goblin units, and we will have units for other races. For example, things like we could have a Minotaur hero with either pets, if it was a hunter, that acted like a unit instead of summoning them. So you start the game with them and they use the unit rules. The unit rules are just a different play on having more than one model as a hero. We really like the way that the summoning rules work, but that's working for some things like undead and things like that. However, and demons. But hero units are a different play on that. So yeah, we've got options to have like a dwarf hunter with a mount like World of Warcraft that works in the game that way as well. So a pet. So yeah, so the question is, yeah, I think most goblins would be units because of the way they are, but we'll have some that aren't. And we will have other races that actually are heroes as well, hero units as well. Do you see certain races not having access to certain archetypes for story or other reasons? For example, orcs currently have no ranged or magic aggressor. Do you envision something like that remaining, or do you intend to eventually have one of everything for all the races? It's a good question. We don't have a hard and fast rule around that. We kind of go with the flow in terms of the storyline and the way that we feel inspired to produce models. We would like to have differences between units, between races. So the chance of having a magic-wielding aggressor Minotaur is probably lower than an elf, because we already have some. But you could have a Minotaur with a giant crossbow or something like that, or throwing spears or something that counted as a RNG range champion. So there's no hard and fast rules. I can't make any promises either way. It would be nice. We do have a lot of players that come over from other games that still like to play certain races. We really like that idea, even though the game is it's one of the main features of the game is there's no factions. So it's one of the main features and the main one of the things we push the game and what the reason why the game is so balanced. But because people like to play certain races and we like that flavor as well, we would like to have at least most of the options, if not all of them, covered for every race. But potentially you could do things like put goblins with orcs and you could cover everything, and humans might go with something else, for example. So yeah, I think that's no hard and fast rules. We'll see how we go. With a busy schedule ahead of you, with the origins and fluff still be up to date, certain heroes have not had their stories told. This is a really good one. I would love to do nothing more every day than just write background material. It's all in my head. I've got notes scattered all over the place in my notes app on my Macs, Apple Macs. But I haven't got the time to get all out and edit it. So we will be trying to get more and more background material out. Colin and I, right when we can. So the answer is I'd love to get them all out, and with time we won't be able to get them all out as fast as we can, but there is plans to have background stories and ongoing story that involves all the heroes in the game. So hopefully we'll get to that. I am trying to set aside some time to do it every week, so we'll see how we go, if I get better at that as well. Right, good question. Will the undead be a class of their own, or will they be undead forms of other races? They will be a race on their own. However, some of them potentially will be count as other race as well. We've got Fazil, who is effectively a human undead, but he actually only counts as undead at the moment. He's our first undead model. We have... Spoiled. There will be, if I haven't spoiled it, I'm going to spoil it now. We have an undead Minotaur in the works, which is not Zyvira, because Zyvira is not undead, but there is a new hero coming out who's an undead Minotaur, and potentially she might count as a Minotaur as well as an undead, but for all intents and purposes, undead are their own race. So we envision in the future we'll have undead covering all the major classes, and you'll be able to play all undead if that's what you wanted to do. Potentially have things like you could have the necromancers like Zarin and Zyvira and even Styx potentially in the undead, because they kind of tie together in the fluff, but in the background material. But yes, we will have proper undead for the majority of classes, if not all of them. Is there any area of the game you're not satisfied with or feel may need a change in the future, perhaps because of the new rules not yet revealed? Any of the game you're not satisfied with or may change? It's a good question. I'm pretty satisfied with everything, really. I think practically, as we were disappointed that some of the models have pretty bad breakpoints. Obviously before I did this, I had never made a miniature or even got close to doing it or even thought about it in my entire life. So the engineering of miniatures is an art form that I've gotten better at, and so have the sculptors for that as well. Like when we first engaged Tom and James, the two main sculptors of the game, they'd never done 54 mil before. And because we pushed the envelope in terms of the quality of the miniatures, our miniatures tend to sit somewhere between gaming pieces and show pieces. And we probably erred on the side of show pieces in a few of the models, and we have pretty fragile breakpoints when they're used for gaming, which is something I'm just not satisfied with. We have re-sculpted a lot of those, but we haven't had the time or the money to actually produce them with the new 3D sculpts, because it costs money to do the 3D print again. So it is on our radar, and with the new ones like Shan and Jaeger, and you'll notice the new stuff doesn't have those breakpoints. That's one area. In terms of the game rules, I was keen to have one model I wish I brought out, and a lot of people have commented on it, was the Eridith druid, the female druid. We had her in the first Kickstarter, and she never got, she didn't get opened up in either one of them. The reason being because she transformed into a bear, like in World of Warcraft, I guess, when the druid turns into a bear. It was very expensive to have 254 models as one. Now that the game's mature and we've established ourselves as a gaming company, not beyond Kickstarter, then I think we could do it these days. So that's one thing I'd like to do that we haven't done with. In terms of the future stuff, so hero unit rules are a precursor to us potentially moving into a more skirmish-based version of the game if you wanted to do it in the future. So that's potential, but I'm definitely satisfied where we're at. The game's amazing. I still love playing it. Every time I play, I get a buzz out of it. There's a lot of players who like playing it. Our player base is growing. So yeah, nothing really that I'm not satisfied with other than the breakpoints, as I mentioned. What are the current plans for things like shrines, effigies and souls as models of the game? So I get asked this a lot. I always get... I'll tell you what the problem is with this, right? So the way that we've done the character shrines, they effectively are four models. So we could either do four new heroes or monsters or do four shrines. It's the same amount of money to produce them, to create them. And we just don't know whether that's adding enough value to the game at the moment. We are experimenting with bringing out one shrine kit that then had bits to let you create all the character shrines as well as a generic one. That's probably the way to go because we can get away of doing that. Maybe it might cost production-wise the same as 1.5 hero slots. But we then will have to... It'll be different because all the illustrations will have to... We can't be true to the illustrations because they're all different. If you look at the four character shrines, they're all very different. In fact, the LD one is a stone golem sitting down. So I don't know how we're going to do that in a generic kit. We probably can't. And then, of course, we need the stone golem form, Eldir himself, which is a fifth model. So that's our choice. Like, we're a small company. We can't do five heroes. I mean, it'll take us more than a year to do that. And it means we do no releases of heroes in that year. So at the moment, it's not really... I think as a compromise, we're going to look at doing a kit that is one model that lets you put together all the four character shrines as well as a generic one. Players then have a choice of buying five of those models. Well, if we do bring them out, they'll be cheaper than heroes. We're not trying to make money out of the shrines. Well, I mean, we'll make money, but not like we are with the heroes. So we'll potentially do that. So I think that's still a good chance. We've been doing really well with sales and growth in the last 8 months this year. So if that continues, yes, then early in the new year, I'd love to do that. I really would. So that's something that we would look at doing. Hey, Jeff Tewerick. Hey, mate. Haven't seen you for a while. GT is an old friend of ours, of mine. Well, probably, it could be 20 years. And he's been a great supporter of our Kickstarters and our model. So cheers, GT. Good to see you, mate. Thanks for tuning in. That's great. Right, cool. Okay, so now we've got, can we expect any additional races to be introduced anytime soon? If so, what? We've been pretty good with races getting added. So we've added in Goblins and Undead most recently. There's a bit of a reveal coming. I am keen to have... Okay, all the races we've done so far have been traditional races. They're not our own IP, right? Elves, dwarves, minotaurs, goblins, etc. We know everything dwarves. So I have designed a race that is a futuristic style race, like kind of an alien race from another planet in the universe that gets drawn into the combat on the Shadow Plane, because essentially the Shadow Plane is not just bordered along Athen, which is the where the mortals live. It is actually borders on all other planes as well, other planets, things like that. So potentially, there are other races, and I'd love to introduce the alien race that is our own IP that lets us do what you want and really push the boundaries in terms of the miniatures. We could just do whatever we want because it's our own race. So I think the next one that we would do potentially would be that. If we introduce another race, and I am currently working through the next year's releases, and I've announced there's going to be a narrative campaign launched in January, worldwide campaign. That's kind of introduced a whole lot of new things, including new rules specific for the campaign. I'm toying with introducing the alien race in that story arc, but at the moment, yeah, nothing concrete. So I think if I was going to have a bet, and because it's my decision, I could actually, I could win the bet. I would bet that we would have a alien race that is completely our own IP in the game. Cool. Okay, good questions. The speculation is that the next map coming out is a 5v5 swamp map, but are there any new 3v3 maps in the pipeline? One of the things that drew me in, and many people have pushed in the game to judgment, was the 3v3 format and the delight it is to have a smaller scale game that is still completely balanced and engaging. Yeah, so we said from the start, 3v3 is just as important for us. I mean, 5v5 is our main game. It is what the championship tournaments will always be. We might have a couple of rounds of 3v3, but when we design the game, we try to balance it for both as best we can. If we cannot, we will err on the side of 5v5. But so far, we've done a very good job with 30 plus heroes of keeping 3v3 a great game. It's fun and still competitive and balanced. Now, will there be 3v3 maps? I would say that any map we bring out in 5v5, down the track, we will bring out a 3v3 version of it. So we got sort of, we did things a bit out of whack when we did the Cobblestone 3v3. Cobblestone 5v5, brought out Swamp for 3v3, and then Scorched Earth for 5v5. So we're a bit out of sync at the moment. But we would be potentially, yeah, there is a plan to bring out a 5v5 Swamp at some stage and potentially a 3v3 Scorched. We'll see how we go. But I think, yeah, the direct answer to the question is we'll be bringing out 3v3 maps. Yeah, we'll continue to support it and bring out more maps for it. So cool. Are we approaching critical mass of heroes to the point where we need to rotate limited format? If not, what is the point for the Blear Brothers? 32 heroes feel like a sweet place for 5v5s, but it's approaching a little excessive for 3v3. It's an interesting question. I didn't think we were at the critical mass yet. I always had 50 heroes in my mind. I think we're at 34 or something. If you count the ones we haven't released, we might be 34, 35. Potentially, there are... When I first came up with the concept, I did have penciled in my notes the concept of rotating heroes, like a limited format, a bit like Magic the Gathering do. It is a little bit, if we did do that, it would only be for the major championship events, for the competitive players, because we wouldn't expect the casual gamer to have enough heroes to be able to cater for rotation. But if the competitive players, we probably would expect that. So I think for our, like the Judgment North American Championship, for example, potentially that in the future we would rotate heroes in and out of that cycle. So for a given season, we would say, okay, these are the heroes that you can use and these are the heroes that you can't. So potentially, if you look at League of Legends and Dota 2, they seem to work out fine with like 150 heroes, whatever it is. I realize that a lot of those never don't make competitive play because they're not viable. So I would never want to be in that position. We don't want to have heroes that are not viable competitively. We will always strive to make them always. So that way, I don't think we can go 150 because that would be outrageous. But I think if we got closer to 50, potentially if we had a serious 3v3 championship, we would do some rotation then before that, potentially. But yeah, at the moment, I think we're going okay. Are there any future plans to have slightly tweaked hero rules for 3v3s and 5v5s? We are. Okay, so our design, from the start, we've always said, well, we don't want to do that. We want to have everything viable for both. But it is becoming to the point where it's a little bit limiting for us in the 5s game to always have to worry about the 3s game. I don't think we'd ever have different cards for heroes. But things like Dorga Khan, there's a good chance in the next patch we will say that we'd highly recommend that Dorga Khan should not be summonable on the 3v3 map. Having a fourth model on the board that is so strong is quite overbearing when it's 3v3, where we're 5v5 because there's so many other heroes on the board, doesn't have such the impact. So I think for us, we would have to, yeah, we would think about that. Things like Dogger Khan is probably the catalyst for us to go, okay, we really want this to work in fives, but it's going to be hard to do the same model working in threes, so we'll say he's not available. So the answer is yes, we would do that. Can you spoil the next undead thing, please? Undead Minotaur, female incoming. Yep, that's spoiled. Can't wait. Should have illustrations for her shortly because we are already doing a lot of illustrations for the narrative campaign and she is one of the main protagonists in the campaign. So, yep, coming soon. Are there other races that haven't been explored yet? A personal favorite of mine in fantasy has always been Lizardmen. I mentioned that we want to do our own IP. I think, in terms of if there's any races, known fantasy races that we haven't done yet, I tend to think no-ish on the top of my head and thinking about Dungeons and Dragons or other things that I'm into. There's not a lot that I'm inspired to do. I've always kind of liked to do ogres, but we have minotaurs, so I'm not sure it'd be cool to do that. Trolls is an option, which I really like, but yeah, are they different enough? I'm not sure. So I think for us, lizard men, same as rat men, I'd be inclined to steer away from what is clearly IP from other companies. Even though we've got elves and dwarves, they're so generic that you know no one could really claim to have their IP outside of Tolkien, I guess. So yeah, I think we'll be steering down the road of our own races in that if we introduce more at this point. Never going to say never. I don't know. You know, I could change my mind. We could change our mind and might introduce other races. But yeah, at this point, we're kind of thinking our own IP. Which class is the hardest to design a hero for? When is the next Soulgazer coming? Which class is the most difficult to design for? It's a tough one. Maybe Soulgazers. Because we talked about IP, our own IP. Soulgazers are our own IP. They're the only class that are. All the other class stereotypes are stereotypical of same classes in role-playing games or computer games. In terms of defenders, aggressors, supporters, and hybrids, they're all pretty much the same to design for. I think we've done a pretty good job across those four. We have, supporters and hybrids are a bit of a loose term. Like we've got supporters that could be considered hybrids and hybrids that could be considered supporters. So we're not really that fussed on that one. We feel we've done a good job across the board with those. Aggressors are probably the easiest. So when we started, we went, right, let's do a typical melee aggressor. And we did, actually the first one we did was actually Rakir, which wasn't typical, but then we did a Zhonya to say, right, what's a typical in your face, axe to face aggressor, Zhonya. Cool, okay, that was pretty good. What's a typical defender? That was Marcus. And then we kind of, what's a typical ranged aggressor? We did a Fire Mage and we did a Ranger in Elendir, Fire Mage and Star. So these all fell out pretty quickly and they were pretty easy to design for. Soulgazers have always been more difficult, and I think the fact that if you ask me right now which class needs the most balance, it is probably Soulgazers. Most of the Soulgazers, probably three of the five, or maybe, I don't know. We feel perhaps they're a bit under the curve. There's some discussion in the background about whether it's too easy to Soulgaze with other heroes, which detracts from the need to take Soulgazers. The one that stands out that probably transcends that is Saiyan because she's just so good and versatile. So do we buff every Soulgazer so they like Saiyan? Then you might see three or four Soulgazers in the game. Or do we make Soulgazing by other soul harvesting by non-Soulgazers, picking them up off the board, do we make that harder to do so Soulgazers are better at the what thing they're supposed to be better at? So there's a lot of discussion in the background around that. So I think just because that the fact that Soulgazer's class is probably not in a perfect state like the others are, that would be the class I'd nominate as being the most difficult to cater for, to design for. So, cool. Still got a fair few viewers. So, yep, so fire away any questions or comments. I'll flip back and forth every now and again. But, yeah, so it's all good. Okay, so we're up to now. Did you ever plan on creating further versions of heroes with different rules? For instance, in Warcaster, Warlocks, and War Machine, Haley 1-2-3, or in Guild Ball, you got Veteran Fangtooth and Veteran Boar and stuff like that. Right, it's interesting this question because when we first started designing it, back of my head, I thought I didn't want to do that. I don't. I think it got a little bit unwieldy in War Machine when there was like three and four of heroes. It just didn't make sense. The background didn't support the fact that there was different heroes fighting each other from different eras. It was a bit weird. Judgment actually supports that. The whole time warp aspect of the Shadow Plane means well and truly we could bring a hero from 100 years in the future or 50 years in the future to fight the hero now, and it makes complete sense. We get away with it, and the fluff supports it completely. So I have already in the background material now, you've got where Styx, for example, and Zarin have both been. There is this picture of Styx that we went out in the first Kickstarter when he didn't get unlocked, where he is in his Undertaker gout with his top hat and he's got his suit on and he's carrying his scythe. And then we did Cyborg Styx. And then in the fluff, it talks about Zarin becomes a lich in the future. So I think we've got no choice with some of them because we want to bring out the earlier version of Styx. We want to bring out the Lich version of Zarin. So I think the answer is to when it really makes sense in the story arc, yes, I think we will have in the future two versions of the same hero. Now, the way that we're going to do that is not so Zarin 1, Zarin 2. Zarin might have a different name when he's a necromancer, and I think I've spoiled the name in one of the backstories. I think it was the one, yeah, the Nephany Styx story arc. So we might bring out a version of the hero with a different name, but it's the same hero because the background tells you that. So I think we're not going to do it en masse. Absolutely no way. Like you're not going to really see. You wouldn't think you'd see Elendil 2 or those kind of things, but when the story arc, like people who are open to this, would be Zyvira. It would be Zarin, Styx. It'll be Krul, because the story arc Colin's writing about Krul and Zonya lends itself to time travel as well. So, and him being around for a long time, he's a good option. Potentially Haxar. So potentially Thrommel. There's some story arc on the dwarves that might lend itself to it. So yes, so there are options for a few of them that we might do, but it definitely won't be en masse. Cool. Kyriakos, all other heroes should drop the Soul Harvest to three or lower. Soul Gazer should stay at six. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the options we are discussing. Maybe not three, but making it more difficult to. Potentially, yeah, maybe three. Like potentially, make it more difficult for other heroes, so it makes Soul Gazers more specialist in that area. The one thing we always have to think about, and when designing a game, it is never easy to make big changes like that. We've probably instantly lengthened every single game if we do that, because at the moment, heroes are picking up souls to close out games. And if it's more difficult for all non-Soul Gazers to do that, by definition, the games will probably go longer. And that's something we definitely do not want to do. So, as a game designer, it is quite difficult to tweak things like that, and you need to think about all the different repercussions and the ripple effects that those design changes will have. Other option is to improve the soul gazing to say five instead of sorry, seven instead of six. So when you have a reroll up your sleeve, you're pretty much guaranteed to pick up the soul with the Soul Gazer. That might speed up games. Do we want to do that? Do we want to make it that easy for a Soul Gazer to pick them up? For me personally, it feels like picking up souls off the ground is pretty good at the moment. It's a balanced state. So is that the wrong tweak? There's also some discussion around. So I'll tell you right now. So the next patch is going to be much smaller than the previous one. This is a championship patch. So the patch just before Warfare Weekend every year is going to be the October 1 patch is a very sensitive patch. It's a last chance for us to tweak the game, before we have our national championship in North America, which in the future, and even this year, but in the future is going to be a huge event for us. So this patch is not the patch we'll be introducing sweeping changes. So I can tell you now that there'll be small tweaks to some of the heroes for this patch, but we're not going to be addressing the en masse any issue with perceived issue with soul gazers in the game. So yeah, so if we do anything, it'll be the 1st of January, which is the patch after the championship. Cool. Right. How did Gen Con go in terms of sales, growth, and the business side of things that meet the game's needs in terms of maintaining the planned production schedule? Any chance it went well so it'd be able to be more than previously planned? Gen Con went very well. I'm not going to go into numbers because it's sensitive, but we didn't lose money on it, which is always the first prerequisite. It was a very expensive con for us to get to. We had to fly Jay there, Jeff and I from Australia. We had to ship all our product there and back. The venue itself, everything was expensive. It was a huge expense for us. It was a big risk. There were people in Entrepreneurs Avenue where we were that I think crashed and burned, unfortunately. It was a huge risk for us. The competition was immense. Every single big managing manufacturer was there. And we did well. We didn't lose money. We did very well. We made a lot of sales. It was the growth of the game and visibility. It was huge. Like just being there, you get kudos just being there. Like the gravitas that we gained as a company being there. Like having people, you know, Will Hungerford from PP and you know, there's people coming up to us and the Kingdom Death people coming into our store. Like these are big players in miniature gaming, and they were all, we're on the map. So in that sense, it was brilliant. We are in a better position. We've had a lot of good growth in the last 8 months, where financially the game is self-sufficient now. The company's doing really well. We've made no secret of the fact that Jeff and I both have full-time jobs. Neither of us, we work full 5 days a week on other jobs. So we are not in the position where we can do things full time with Judgment. That is a long term goal. Hopefully not too long term, but that is the goal. But in terms of being able to fund heroes, yes, we are in a better position than we planned. So we are, like things like the narrative campaign, we're trying to look at getting models out of cycle to release them for the campaign. So potentially Bale and Sarnok could be done early. That's one of the things we're toying with. We'll shift them from Adepticon to Christmas. So let's see how we go. But that's the kind of, yeah, so it's good. It was really good. Right. How big do you envision the competitive side of this game getting? From the start, I envisioned the competitive side of this game to become huge. There is like, okay, when you start making a game, particularly from scratch, like us with no experience from Australia, you just want to get past the first Kickstarter. You just want to make it viable for Kickstarter, then actually get it past Kickstarter, then get it past the second Kickstarter. So there's small steps, but in my head, I never would have got into this if I didn't have visions of this being the biggest or one of the biggest competitive miniature games in the world. The game was built from the ground up with that in mind. Jeff and I have played competitive miniature games for 25 years. Like literally we have. We have always been competitive minded, but we've always enjoyed our games and loved it and never let the competitive side take over. We know what used to make a good miniature game good in competitive play and what made it poor. We have, in my mind, pretty much answered and solved every problem that miniature games have in competitive play. We've solved them. In terms of things like balance between factions, don't have factions. In terms of being accessible for anyone to play, it is accessible because you don't have to buy everything in a particular faction. You can get away, theoretically, you can get away with 7 models. If you're good, you can take their 7 models and play in any competitive tournament and do well. We have, in terms of patching the game, we regularly patch the game. We're very, very, we don't let things be broken for 12 to 18 months like there has been in previous games that I've played. I think from the ground up, we did do a beta release of a engine that takes results and gives us feedback on pick and bans. That's about to be relaunched publicly now. The beta was closed after a short period of time, but now we're opening it. So we got plans there. The game, in terms of, there's been problems in the past with highly competitive miniature games with measuring. We have gotten rid of tape measures from the game completely. They're actually not tournament legal when you play Judgment. You use sticks. And we believe that's made them much more accurate and less prone to arguments. There's pre-measuring, which always helps with, which has caused problems in the past. We believe we tackled all the problems that it has, and there's no limit to how big this game can get competitively. We're launching the North American Championship this year at Warfare Weekend. It's going to be an invitational. We're going to have a whole program of how to run heats and qualifiers. And people who know me from a long time ago, I ran rankings sites and rankings engines for years, for like a decade. I'm very big, and I've run Masters events and so introduced a lot of that to miniature gaming as well. So sky's the limit. We love it. We've made a game that's great for competitive play and it's fun, but also can have, what we believe, unlimited potential in competitive play. So that's the answer for that one. I've got some questions here. Many ninjas took the Gen Con. We had a lot of ninjas. GT, I think one of your ninjas turned up. They picked up Shan, which was fantastic. Are there any plans for human melee aggressor? If so, is there a particular culture you're looking at? We actually have rules for a human melee aggressor that is an oriental design. This was actually, the hero was designed by a playtester. So it is the first hero that Jeff or myself haven't designed. And I had some feedback and input when the proposal was put to me. I think it's got good potential, and I am keen to get it out there potentially. Yep. So there would be an oriental style. It's a melee aggressor that's potential. Yep. So that's from Theo on Twitch. Thanks, Theo. Okay, so here we go. A quick drink. Hope you're enjoying it. How long are we going for? 37 minutes. Cool. Going good so far. Okay, cool. Did you ever balance heroes based off how strong the teams they play in are, or do you try and focus more on each model individually? I think... Okay, so let's have a think about this. When we design a hero, we design it completely in isolation initially. So we initially think, right, what do we want to do? Do we want to do human aggressor, for example, melee aggressor? Okay, what styles do we have at the moment? What style do we want to do this one? It'll all be focused on then making that hero work. So the first rendition of a hero normally has no levels. We just do the base statistics and the base spells and abilities. We playtest that to death, and then we start thinking, right, what would be cool, what is thematic, and what is a natural progression for this hero to go to the next level. So look at Donraka, for example, right? So Donraka, big tanky Minotaur, really cool. He's a shaman. He's got some cool abilities. And then we thought, you know what? He could be hyper regeneration. That's great. Let's put that for level 2. And then, you know, let's start to introduce some of his healing powers, because shamans normally have a healing ability aspect, and we did healing wave. So for us, that was a natural progression. And then we did all in isolation. Then at the end of it, we will look for any breaking things, any combos or things that break it on any of the maps. Does it break the game? Is there a nasty combination with magical artifacts or with other heroes that are going to cause us problems? So before we go to release the model, we always look for that as well. So the answer is twofold. Initially, all isolation. Before we go live, globally, we look at it. Now, you notice Bale and Sana were the first ones we kind of released with 0.8 and released them well before they were meant to be in production and tournament legal. The big reason for that is because largely it's Sana's ability to steal active abilities of other models, both friends and enemies. That is by definition, a can of worms, right? So every time we release a hero now, we need to go to Sana and go, what is it going to be like if she steals this ability? But that sounds dangerous as a game designer to do that, but for us, it's really cutting edge and it makes the hero amazing. Like, all of a sudden, there's just unlimited potential for that hero. And we're always talking about, we want high skill cap champions, right? We want champions like Zhonya and Dhonrakha, who have a low ceiling of how difficult they are to play. You want new players to come in and go, right, I'm just going to play bang, bang, bang. This does exactly what it looks like on the tin. Bang, I'm going to use it. Then you want to have heroes that really reward those players that invest the time and energy. And we also want the meta to evolve where players can turn up to a major event, have some kind of secret tech, and they unleash it on the masses. This is what we want. So heroes like Bale and Sana are that. They're going to be surprising us for a long time. And I mean that in a good way. So we have to have that period where we think globally what's going to happen with these, if we release these heroes. Just in case, we've got a fair amount of viewers. I'm just going to just look a few things. If you're new to the game, you want to find out more, you can go to judgment.game. This is the Judgment is the game we're talking about. I'm Andrew. I'm the games designer and creator, and I'm doing an AMA. If you want to, they've got an awesome Facebook group. They have 500 users. It's a private group, so you need to apply for it, but it's really good. And we've got a really vibrant and fantastic Discord community, so check that out as well. And if you are a regular and you haven't done it yet, we're halfway sold out already in the first week of our Warfare Weekend ticket. So if you just buy a Warfare Weekend ticket, you then can register for the Judgment events for free. So my co-designer, Jeff, is going to be my brother, is going to be going to Warfare Weekend for the convention. Okay, going good. We're over the hump now. Let's have a look. So I've heard you've traveled a lot. What is the best food you've had in your travels that you can't get in Australia? I traveled a lot. Yeah, I guess I have. I've been an adult for a long time, so I've had a lot of opportunity. In terms of food, Australia is very good for getting food. I think I'll just pick one place that I remember sticks in my mind. I was in Sicily. It was a fantastic trip. And I remember I was in a place called Taormina, which is kind of on the east coast of Sicily. It's a beautiful, beautiful town, very high up in the cliffs. It's idyllic town. And I remember having a pizza there that was... Now, you can get pizzas anywhere, but a pizza in Sicily was pretty special. So I'm just going to say that. So, yeah, Sicily was amazing. And yeah, pizza in Sicily. What's better than that? Okay, cool. How do you approach balancing fixed terrain? How do you find opportunities to work around an opponent with advantage terrain? So one of the early questions around competitive play, one of the things that used to be a problem and probably still is for a lot of miniature games is the setup of terrain. It's hard to make it balanced. When you're in a tournament and the TA is just chucking things around, it's often that one side becomes much stronger than the other. So our initial thought was to remove that problem, because a lot of the things in Judgment were thought of was, here's a problem with competitive miniature gaming, also for even casual play, how do we solve it? We eventually got to the point where fixed terrain was a thing. We thought, well, the problem with terrain is that you throw it haphazardly, you're in a rush as a TO, there's 50 tables, you just and terrain will move. When people put their tray of models on the board, they'll shift the terrain, it never gets shifted back. And by the end of the day, the terrain's a mess. The one way, it also slows down tournaments, which is another problem. So one way that we solved this was fixed terrain. Now, this was pretty innovative. No one, I don't think, has done, even now, has neoprene mats with terrain on them. The other thing is the origins of Judgment, which is League of Legends, Dota 2, they have the same map fixed every game for years, and all they change is the monsters, and you get variety out of it from the heroes and the picks and bans and things like that. Heroes of the Storm did have the concept of different maps, which is why we've got different neoprene mats where they have the one mat. So the fixed terrain made sense for a lot of reasons. It also let us balance it. We could have spent a lot of time practicing with different terrain setups, which we did, to make sure it's balanced. Now, our early stuff, if you remember back, the terrain was symmetrical. So the side of the board didn't matter. We've now stretched our legs a bit, and all the maps, even the one in the starter box, they're not symmetrical. And we just test them to make sure they're fine. I mean, Scorched Earth, there's some debate about whether one side is perhaps better than the other. I think it's the one with the smoke, I think. I don't even know. But the thing is, it's so dependent on what heroes you've got. So even if one player believes one side of the map is better than the other, the fact is that same player can take different heroes and realize, oh, the other side's better for these heroes. So that's how we balance it. It just balances. It works. I mean, we do a lot of testing, and we're very careful with placement. Now, the new 5v5 cobblestone we're bringing out with terrain is really good. I think this is the fourth neoprene we've done with fixed terrain, and I think we've nailed it. It's so much fun to play on. Scorched Earth was amazing too, but Scorched Earth, we tried to sort of push the boundaries and make it really a high skill cap map. I think we've done that with the teleportation circles and this kind of jazz and two walls in the middle. But the 5v5 cobblestone, I think, is perhaps potentially the best all-round map we've done so far. I think for casual or competitive play, it's going to be brilliant. And that's coming out soon, so I'll have the prototype in about a week. Excellent. Will there be more fleshed out details for JNAC qualifiers following Warfare Weekend? Some sort of registration for events. Yep, and in line with number two, how will the handling of players who have already qualified work? So I am going to release full details for this. So I'll probably release it before Warfare Weekend, so people are aware what's going to happen year two. For those who don't know, this year's Warfare Weekend is an open tournament. Anyone can apply for it. We've got 32 places. I think half of them are sold out already in the first week. In the future years, it's going to be an invitational. Whether it stays 32 or not, we'll see. But potentially, there will always be a few spots open for a last chance qualifier at the convention Warfare Weekend as well. Throughout the year, different events will be able to apply to be qualifiers. Now, every event that they'll be open to most events. If you've got 8 or more players, it can be a qualifier. Now, a basic qualifier just contributes points to the players. There'll be a ranking system where you get points as you go to events throughout the year, and then a certain amount of people who have points will then qualify. But also, some of the bigger events, like Adepticon, for example, that would be an auto qualifier. So the top one or two, maybe more, depending how big it is, will get an auto position. So maybe it's one for every 8 players in the event. We'll get an auto seat at the North American Championship end of the year at Warfare Weekend. Normally, when I've done this in the past, if a person who's pre-qualified then wins another qualifier that is an auto qualifier, it'll pass down in that actual heat. So, for example, I go to Adepticon, I win Adepticon, I've got a seat, then I go to Las Vegas Open or something, where there's another qualifier that has an auto qualifier for winning it, and I win it, number two will get the opportunity to come. And I think normally in the past, I think it passed down once. If that person doesn't take the seat, then it's lost. But then beyond all that, anyone who goes to any event will accumulate points throughout the year, depending on the size of the event, and those points will help them to get... So the 32 people that go to the Warfare Weekend North American Championship in 2020 will have X, maybe 8, 12, 16 auto qualifiers, people who won during the year. The next 12 will be the next 12 people with the most points on the ladder, and then you might have 4 places available for the last chance qualifier, that kind of thing. That's how that's going to work. I'll be publishing all this officially, and we'll start to take nominations for people to run qualifiers and events next year. Cool. Now that Victor has gotten a second summon, and it was mentioned Zarin could see another summon in the future, how will you introduce this? As a monster similar dog, or just a part of patch to the game? Any plans, different types of summoners, say for instance beasts or elementals, any plans for new heroes that summon demons or undead? Okay, so I'm keen to bring out another undead model. I'm actually keen to redo the skeleton model to a proper skeleton out of the ground, skeleton warrior. Potentially, we might make it a beefed up version of the skeleton, potentially, and make it also a monster that spawns. I mentioned the narrative campaign. I'm going to spoil some more about that at the end. But the campaign is going to be undead versus elves. That's the narrative part of it, and it's on the future timeline. So it's in space, the Nefenees timeline, and obviously Bale and Sana. So out of that, we would like to have more undead models. So potentially we could have a skeleton warrior monster or a ghoul or something like that, and automatically that would be summonable by Zarin and any other models that can summon. There will be other models that can summon, definitely, undead and demons. There'll be other warlocks, and there'll be other necromancers that can do it. Potentially, even Zyvira might change at one stage so she can summon as well, potentially. But yeah, so answer is yes. And in terms of elementals, yep, it's a chance. Like someone like an Estarial Estarial type mage could get a fire elemental, for example. So that's potential as well. So I mean, there's really no limit, I guess, but I'm not just throwing things out there. These are all things we're discussing, but definitely in the near future, there will be other undead models that can be summoned, and there'll be other necromancers that can summon. There'll be other demon models that can be summoned, and other warlocks that can summon them as well. So in terms of hunter pets and stuff, they'll probably more be like hero units. So they're not going to be summonable. As such, they'll follow the hero unit rules. So you deploy with your wolf, if you're a hunter or something, or your bear, whatever it is, and then you'll use the hero unit rules, other than using the summoning rules that we've got at the moment. Cool. I think I answered that one. Getting towards the end now. Yeah, that's it. Actually, that was all the questions I had there. Now, I got a bunch of questions. Here's another one. Do you have any plans to produce terrain kits to fit with the maps? I would love to get even more immersion into the game. Glad you asked, because one of the things I'm going to spoil today is that with the narrative campaign, deep breath. Okay, so the campaign is in the future. It is elves versus dwarves. Elves versus undead. There's going to be full background material about the campaign. Now, we are going to introduce a new rule, a new terrain type for the campaign, and then we'll see whether we introduce it as in the main game afterwards. That will be like a platform city-based fighting. So, for example, there'll be 3D terrain with platforms, it'll be 1-inch, 2-inch, 3-inch, 4-inch high buildings and platform, and there'll be rules for heroes getting on the platforms, getting on the building, what advantage they get when they're in higher compared to someone who's lower. There'll be rules for getting pushed off these things. So you'll be visioned, you'll have fights of two heroes on a platform fighting, and potentially one can push one off the other, off the platform. Depending how high it is how much damage they'd get. They'd also potentially have conditions like stunned or knocked down, things like that. So these terrain pieces are going to be produced by Muse on Minis. So people who have seen their 3D terrain for things like Infinity and stuff, it's going to be that awesome quality terrain. This is going to be introduced in the campaign, and there'll be a whole bunch of rules. The campaign is going to introduce new magical artifacts. There'll be levels 4 and 5 for the undead and elf protagonists in the campaign. Now, if things go well and the campaign goes well and the terrain rules go really well, we will then look at introducing similar stuff for other maps and general play. So at this point, we're toying with bringing out a futuristic map for the campaign. We're just not sure whether it will just be the terrain that does that, or we'll actually produce a neoprene for it. But yeah, we're having a lot of time. We've kind of got, 4.5 months or something before we want to kick off the campaign in January, so maybe 5 months. So we've already started kicking things off in terms of getting lots of illustrations done, getting a lot of rules done, potentially making some models specific for the campaign. So we feel that the game rules lend themselves to really introducing the concept of 3D terrain. Now, this is not going to be something that's going to be every game will be like this. this is not going to be something like, but it is, we're going to introduce it. The beauty of narrative campaigns and worldwide campaigns. Now, the reason why we're doing this is people were submitting their results of their games, and these results are going to determine what heroes or monsters get created to be part of the game, the broader game. So, for example, elves versus undead, if a particular faction in that undead versus elves thing wins, then we might bring out, that might mean we're going to bring out elves, we're going to bring out undead, we're going to bring out this in our release schedules. It's going to determine our release schedule and rules. And also, there's going to be things like magical artifacts which can be permanently unlocked. So if they're permanently unlocked, they become part of the main game. Now, with the thing about the elevation rules and the big bases, 100% that we've got rules for this. So there won't be a platform. So the minimum width of a platform is going to be 50 mil, so the models can fit on them. There's rules for how far the hangover is in terms of when they fall, when they don't. We will be, when we do a terrain kit, there will be little fillers. So if the model's half on, there'll be a similar size filler so the model can be stable as well. So there'll be more and more reveals for this as it comes out. We don't want to detract from the fact that there is Warfare Weekend coming up and a lot of stuff going on. But the narrative campaign is our big 2020 thing. It's going to kick off the year. It's going to be fantastic. And it is going to determine what our release schedule is for 2020. So we're really super pumped about it. There is a lot of potential with the campaign that we're going to do. That, and if it works well, we'll do this every year to sort of add flavor to every year. There are things like, potentially, characters could die off for the year. So if we get to this point where we are rotating heroes in competitive play, potentially the narrative campaign could determine which heroes get killed or not. We'll be collecting all this data by people submitting their results in the website that we created. So that's going to be relaunched to people who missed it. The beta test went really well. We're now about to relaunch the statistics website, and that will be open to everyone, the general public. The beta was only for Discord people and Vassal Leagues and stuff, but yeah, so that's going to be back. So super pumped about that. So at this point, I'm trying to push Bale and Sana so they're available at the start of next year. So that will be before Adepticon, obviously. That'll be our release for Q1. And then the campaign itself will then determine what we do moving forward. So there were things like, if you play a campaign game, you need to have at least one player needs to have Styx or Zarin, the other one needs to have Nefani or Sky. One player can't have both those in the same warband. And then it qualifies as a campaign game. And then when you finish that, you put your results in and it determines which faction's winning. So at this point, any other hero, because like any game, could be transported into that battle. But the main protagonists, like Nefani, Sky, Styx and Zarin, will have levels 4 and 5, which they can unlock. Just those heroes will be able to have the ability to do that during the game. So they're going to have, and there'll be special magical artifacts that just those heroes can get. Then we've got other protagonists like Bale and Sana are going to be part of the main protagonists. We'll determine which faction they're on at some stage. And potentially, if we can get another model out, there'll be another undead model, which is the undead Minotaur female I mentioned. Fazil ought to be out, so he's also the undead faction. So we've got all these kind of things happening. The way the story's panning out at the moment, Bale and Sana would be siding with the elves. But that's the idea. So there'll be two factions that you can use. All the other heroes in the game will be neutrals that can be used for either side. And that's basically what that means. So the factions will have access to levels 4 and 5, and the factions will have, the protagonists will have the ability to get magical artifacts as well. So that's great. Super pumped. We're doing artwork for a lot of this. There'll be a big poster similar to the Avengers poster on my wall. We're going to have a big poster of all the main protagonists on it, which will go out to all the stores. So we're going to really try to hype this up. It is not going to be competitive. It's meant to be fun. It'll introduce give us a good chance to really try out the platform and city building rules, because that's what all the campaign rules will be as well, campaign games. And it's going to be after the North American Championship, and it's at the start of the year, so it's well before we have, you know, anything major. And then Adepticon will kick off the competitive season with a auto qualifier at Adepticon when I'm there. So yeah, that's the thing with the narrative campaign, which I'll be releasing more details for in the next month or so. We've got a question here from Theo. When will Vassal League Season 4 be? Don't know. We're going to go over Season 3. Season 3, there could be a bit of Vassal, there could be a bit of Vassal fatigue, but there might be enough players who haven't played the league yet who want to get back in again, so potentially you might run another one. It depends on demand, I guess. But in the lead up to Warfare Weekend and the Judgment North American Championship, I want to have the ability to free up Vassal so people don't feel compelled to play in the league. I'll probably have a space where people can just try out their warbands. And Jeff and I will be available for people to try out their warbands against us and against, like, we're obviously very competitive players and very good at the game. So you get a chance to try out anything you want to try out. So I think the focus will shift towards North American Championship for Vassal. So we might give the league a bit of a break while we do that. Cheddar Caveman, I have to go back and catch up on so much. Yeah, it's been a long cast. We've just hit an hour. So I think that's probably it, unless there's any last minute questions from the guys on the stream. I will wrap it up in a minute or two. But thanks very much for listening. As I said, this will be put up as a podcast episode on audio only. I'll probably upload this video to YouTube as well. I really enjoy doing these. I'll probably do another one if maybe just before the Warfare Weekend. We'll see how we go. But yeah, always keen to answer any questions people have and go there. Is Tirith ever going to do one? Potentially. look, Jeff and I work on the game together all the time. But to be fair, I'm the creator of the game, and I'm a lot of the driving force around all these ideas are in my head and come out of my head. And I bounce them off Jeff, and then he gives me a reality check or tells me whether to run with it. So yeah, potentially he could. So YouTube yesterday's game will go up tonight, Kyriakos. I'm keen to get that game out. It was a really good game, really high level. So I'll put that out today, hopefully. Future type map. Potentially, I don't want to get map fatigue. What I'm thinking we might do is, so when the new cobblestone comes out and it's got all its terrain fixed on it, we could make buildings and platforms that just suit that terrain. I don't know. We haven't decided what to do about the map yet. I'm just conscious of bringing out yet another neoprene. If we did bring out another neoprene that was a space one, we potentially would make it cheaper for people to get into it, because, and then at the very least, we would release full dimensions where all the buildings go on, so you can use any neoprene. So maybe we might just do that rather than produce a new one. We'll see how we go. But the 3D terrain by Muse is going to be, I'm super excited about that. I've seen what they do with other game systems and have these tables, and it's going to be brilliant, so can't wait. Hope you enjoyed all the reveals and enjoyed the AMA. I really enjoyed doing it. It was fantastic. We've got an amazing community. Thanks for tuning in, the people on Twitch. Yeah, and I will hype on. I'll speak to you guys soon. And as usual, I'll be on Discord and Facebook and anywhere else you want to talk to me. And so will Jeff. Option doing threes or fives for the league night. Might be something. Do you mean for the Vassal League? Cheddar Caveman? Yeah, we could look at doing that. But yeah. All right. Cheers, everybody. Peace out. I'll speak to you soon. Good night.